the buzzer McCord on its way. Oh, my goodness.
They have to get it. With no timeouts, they do. Florida wins.
Courtside with Greenberg and Dokic, the definitive college basketball podcast.
All right, it's the world's greatest podcast. We got a bunch for you, a lot of action and a lot of news in college hoops. The TBT, the basketball tournament, is saving basketball. First games are going to be live. Seth and I will be in your living room starting on the 4th of July. The TBT's $1 million event, winner take all. John Mugar, the owner, president, founder, is going to join us. But first, Seth Greenberg, I got to ask you, baseball is back. What are your thoughts?
Okay, so I'm fine. It's fine. I mean, like, here's the deal. To me, it was absolutely embarrassing. I mean, like, to me, whether it's the owners, whether it's the Major League Baseball administrative office, whether it's the players, I thought they were embarrassment. We've been through this for how many months? We're in the middle of a pandemic. We're in the middle of a societal conflict or issue or awakening, and baseball players are bickering. I thought it was an embarrassment. I don't think it's that hard. Get your pitchers warmed up. They're going to pitch about three innings. Go out and play baseball. It used to be America's pastime, and now they look like a bunch of greedy dudes that only cared about themselves, and everyone wanted to win, and no one wanted to do what was in the best interest of others. So, I mean, I'm a Yankee fan. You're a Cubs fan. It's great. But it caught honestly, I mean, they're going to have to win me back.
Seth, I agree. I do. Like, I'm not talking about social issues here, okay? I'm just talking about shut the hell up owners, shut the hell up players, and either play or don't play. That's how I felt about it. Either play or just shut the hell up and go away, because I got tired of all of it, and you and I have been baseball fans since we've been born. I mean, it's just, if you grew up, you played baseball in the summer, you played basketball, you played football, whatever. And I'm totally with you. Like, I'm glad they're playing. That's great. But the truth of the matter is, I got so tired of both. And originally, I was like, shut up, players. You know, you're making all this money. And then a friend of mine, Tucker Barnhart, who's a Gold Glove catcher for the Reds, and I had a conversation. And I'm like, you know what? Owners are going back on their deal. And then it became, Seth, I don't give a damn. You know, just play, don't play. I'm tired of hearing from you. So they're going to play. But you know what? If the Yankees play the Cubs in the World Series, we'll forget about this conversation. And I'll be wearing Cubby blue and you'll be wearing pinstripes. I'll have eye black on it.
I'm going to show you. I'm going to show you right here.
What?
Wait a second here. My prized possession. I don't know if you can see this. It's Seth Greenberg with my favorite player of all time, Elston Howard, when I was a little kid.
There you go.
All right. This is my prized possession with my dad and my brothers. And when I was a little kid, my godfather was Mantle Maris's agent for a while. We used to go down to the stadium. And when I was at USF, obviously Mr. Steinbrenner was great to me. But it's great. Now, everyone, exactly. Shut up, play, try to win people's trust back.
All right, let me ask you this. Where we're sitting right now, do you think we'll have an NBA season coming up?
I do. I do. I'm not sure. I think they made a mistake. I think the TBT had the idea. I think the number of days that they're going to have to be in Orlando and the length of the bubble, I think is a mistake. Me personally, I would have played two or three preseason games, and I would have made every first series game best out of three, and I wouldn't get best out of five until the finals. And those guys would be out of there within a month at the most.
You know, I've changed my tune on that, too. Initially, I was like, hey, man, you got to do what's best for the country. But when I saw that protocol, like you're talking about how long it is, and I don't have any problem with NBA players saying, wait a second, the heck's going on here? I mean, I think I would definitely play were I an NBA player. But I would definitely ask questions. I definitely want to know. I would definitely not just blindly follow and say, well, I'm going to Orlando. I think a lot of NBA players have a lot of legitimate concerns, and I don't have any problem with it. I'm skeptical whether they're going to ultimately play. Seth, I feel like there's a bit of momentum the other way. Now, gun to head, I would say yes, they're going to play. But I feel like there's a – until I see that first ball thrown up, you know, and the first tip and away we go, you know, I'm one of those, I'll believe it when I see it, Seth.
Well, we've seen a number of guys that have opted out, and I think you can see that, but I think for every player to opt out, there's going to be someone that wants to opt in. And I think that a lot of – look, whether it's the TBT or whether it's the NBA, a lot's going to come determine, like, when these first tests come back. Like, Jokic tested positive, so he's held in his country. He's got to be held for another, whatever, 10, 8
it's to 10. It's another week for him.
Yeah, another week for him. So you're going to have some players that are going to test positive. They're going to have to go through protocol. Here's the thing I think it's really, really good. What's happening in the month of June and going into July, and even for college athletics moving forward, protocols are being developed. So therefore, there's actually a potential of a game plan that's now being learned so that if someone does test positive, that they can here's the protocol, what we're going to follow. Like, I had this thing, I texted you this weekend, you blew me off and ignored me. That's okay. You were busy at the on the lake or something. To me, if you know Clemson tested 23 guys that supposedly that were positive. I talked to Dan Radakovich this week. I don't want to get in that conversation. But to me, part of me is as long as no one gets sick and is recovery, is that a good thing? Because now you have 23 players that obviously have antibodies. Number two is there any better place to be for a student athlete? I'm not saying a regular student body, than on a college campus where, A, they have the access to the best medical care. They're not waiting in emergency rooms. They have the ability to see a doctor immediately. They're probably going to be in sterile environments if they have to get quarantined. There's nutritionists and there's support around them. Am I way off on that? I mean, I'm trying to think through it. For a student athlete, where's the healthiest environment, the safest environment to be him to be in?
First off, the text came in at 8:08 on a beautiful Saturday night when I had a massive pickleball tournament going on in my street because I put a pickleball court in my cul-de-sac. And we do play the cracks. I don't want to hear any whining because the ball hit the crack. And we were having beers. Am I wrong to say the safest place an athlete can be is on a college campus? This is from Seth Greenberg. 8:08 on a beautiful Saturday night. World-class medical care, testing, nutrition, and quality accommodations. Now, the response came at 8:46 after my wife Lee and I kicked the hell out of two of my friends, Big Fat Bob and Funky. I'm having beers and hanging out. Enjoy a beautiful Saturday evening, my friend. Come on.
I have no life.
It was in Indianapolis. It was spectacular Saturday night. And it doesn't get dark here until like, and I'm being literal, 10 o'clock. We're on the western part of the eastern time zone. So it stays light till 9:45. So we're out there sweating and bawling and smacking and yelling. And you want to talk about an athlete. Now, let me answer your question. Of course it is. But here's the problem. Here's the problem. And this is what we've seen. The problem isn't when they're on the facility. The problem is when they go out of the college campus. And we've already seen it. Novak Djokovic, my man, has himself a hell of a party, apparently, at an exhibition. And there's video of him, you know, doing what us Serbians do. That's that crazy when we go out. And sure enough, he gets it. So the problem, my brother, is not where they're at, because you are 1,000% right. 1,000% right. Problem is when they go out. Now, here's the other deal. And I think, you know, the numbers say this. It is like, I don't know, like getting struck by lightning for a guy under 30 to die from the coronavirus. At least that's what I've read. But I will also caveat that with, I don't know what the hell is true and what the hell isn't true. So the fact that you get it is not a death sentence for people under 30. So I think, you know, and it's not even close to a death sentence. So I think we got to be a little careful of the hysteria. But I do think, yes, hell, Seth, you and I know people can all they want about college coaches and players being exploited. But when it comes to health, safety, and having a doctor there, a psychologist there, and a nutritionist there, no place better ever. You're never going to live like that again. So you're absolutely right. That's a long answer. And by 8-9? Come on.
I'll tell you.
On a Saturday, double D?
I have no life. I mean, we're legitimately in quarantine. I'll give you my last thing. Really, really interesting that the athletes, the football players at UCLA, basically wanting to bring a third party in to oversee the medical practices of their athletic department, which shows to me, and again, I'm not there, it speaks to a horrendous, horrendous culture within their football program, right? A lack of a trust.
I'm not there either, but one of the things we have seen is they've walked back that a little bit. A lot of these guys get all emotional and walk back. You know who we saw walk back on it? Rashard McCants walked back on his whole deal with North Carolina. I say it all the time, man. Players get emotional, and then they find out what's real, and then they go, oh, well, yeah. But the UCLA thing, I mean, that just shows a total distrust of Chip Kelly and the environment there. They did walk it back a little bit, said they should have conducted that internally. But at the end of the day, internally or externally, those dudes, if you're Chip Kelly, let me put it to you this way, you got a problem. You hope you solve the problem by getting it out in the open. You hope that everybody involved listens, but you got a problem that at some point needs fixing.
Yeah. All right, Kate Cunningham, what do you think? Oklahoma State.
Yeah, I'm really not surprised. I don't think you are. His brother's on staff there.
Oh, assistant coach.
Yeah, I think to most players like him who may be the first pick in the draft, the idea isn't to have a great NCAA tournament. You know, Oklahoma State's banned from the NCAA tournament. I think it's to get play well enough to be the first pick in the draft. I do. And we all like to wax philosophic about, the NCAA tournament, and how important it is to your draft stock. And it is for some, but it wasn't for like Zion Williamson. It's not for Kate Cunningham, I don't think. So it doesn't surprise me that he stayed. But what the bigger picture may be, okay, Oklahoma State got slapped like that. What's coming next for others? But we can stick with Kate if you want, but that's kind of what I saw in the Oklahoma State thing. Guys want to go to the NBA, get that contract. They're not that worried about, like we are, of how you perform right in the NCAA tournament.
Here's a question, right? So Kate Cunningham, obviously they had a staff member that was involved in the FBI investigation. And that the NCAA came in, and Oklahoma State completely did a great job of cooperating with the NCAA. Here's the difference between them and NC State. Like, NC State has the same situation with Dennis Smith going on, which is obviously still, I think they've gotten their letter of inquiry and they're waiting to move forward. The difference is that NC State cleared their whole basketball program. They hired a new coaching staff. They basically changed. They have a new athletic director. Everything is different. I think the one thing that Oklahoma State's saying, wait a second, none of the players here in our program were even involved or here when this current team is being impacted for something that was done outside of their control. Here's my thing. In situations like that, I'm a little torn because I'm really impressed with Mike Boykin. I really am. I'm impressed with how he coaches his team. Now, look, he hired a guy that committed a major violation and brought embarrassment. Now, they got rid of him immediately as soon as it happened. Is that enough? I think in the NC State case, when they just cleared the house and got rid of everyone, they should kill NC State financially, beat them up financially, but I don't think they should get probation because the university did everything. Once they found out, they did everything they needed to do. This situation is a little different because I feel for the players. But the players that signed there knew that they were under investigation, so they made that choice with the idea that they were under investigation. I feel for Mike Boykin because he seems like a really committed coach and a really solid guy. But he had a guy on his staff that made a really terrible decision. Do you think they should be in the NCAA tournament?
Seth, I think as long as the head coach is there, you got to punish the program. I do. And I've always said if you're, we talk about accountability all the time, right? We talk about it constantly. And, what was it, a few years ago, maybe longer than a few now, Seth, they put in that basically your head coach is responsible for, your program. Well, you brought in the guys, it's that old mafia thing. You brought him with us. You know what I mean? So I'm a little bit surprised that maybe Boynton didn't get hit harder. I'm not surprised that they went to the ban. The North Carolina State thing reminds me of the Louisville thing, right? I mean, everybody's gone. I think that's hard. And I do agree with you. I do agree with you that, you know what, you got to pound somebody financially because, let's be honest, I don't know what Dennis Smith was worth to North Carolina State. I don't know. But he was worth enough that the head coach allegedly and the program allegedly thought enough of him to pay him, thus violating the rules. So I think you have to act in kind. They got rid of everybody. They started fresh. But I do think there has to be, you know, some punishment from the school based on payment. And I think you're absolutely right.
Yeah, I think NC State should get a huge penalty. But I think that right now they should be applauded for moving forward and that the current staff that came in should not pay the penalty of the past because the institution did 100 everything that you could possibly do to rectify the situation. That's my take on the thing.
Yeah, and you know, let's be honest. I mean, you got to have, whether you agree with them or not, and no one's ever going to agree, but if you have an organization that's run by the members, you got rules. And if you're going to break the rules, regardless of what you did, you got to be punished based on the organization's rules. Now, you can disagree with them, and most people do in different ways. That's fine. But otherwise, why bother having rules? Why bother having a... why bother having any of it? So, you know, you can't punish the coach because Kevin Keats wasn't there. You can punish the coach in the Oklahoma State thing. I personally, I have no problem with Oklahoma State getting a ban, and I would have no problem if they hit North Carolina State hard. I am waiting, though, to see what happens with Sean Miller and Will Wade at Arizona and LSU. Okay. My guess is nothing. That check will clear.
Wait. You think Arizona, Kansas and LSU walk?
I didn't say them. I said the coaches.
Oh, coach.
I think you're going to see two of the three. I think you're going to see all three get some type of probation. I'm fascinated. You know, Bill Self said, okay, I'm going to sue, right? Easy to say I'm going to sue. Would love to see that trial. Would love to see where that thing goes. I would love to see a prominent college coach on a witness stand, hand on the Bible, interrogated or asked questions of by a very, very good prosecutor. I don't know if it'd be a prosecutor or I guess it'd be a civil suit. So it would be a very good lawyer. I would love, good or bad, and I like Bill, good or bad, but I've never seen it. I want to see it. I hope Bill goes through with it if he feels that strongly about his stance. I think it'd be fascinating as hell, Seth.
I mean, like a deposition would then open up that person to anything and everything to be asked and to receive every bit of documentation, phone logs, travel logs, and everything else that goes into the recruiting process.
Right. Now, you know, you and I both know, I don't know, is it a gray area with a shoe company? Is it a gray area with an agent? I don't know. I really don't. But I would love to see it. I would love to see it. But I do think if I were sitting there at Arizona, or if I was sitting there at LSU, or I was sitting there at Kansas, I'd look at what's been thrown down already and say, ooh, this could get a little sexy. And you have a choice when things like that happen. You can get on the defensive or you can get on the offensive. Look like Bill got on the offensive, and we'll see where it goes. But my guess is they're going
to right from the beginning. Once they got their letter of inquiry, they went immediately to the offensive.
Well, Seth, I'm sure you have. My brother is an attorney, former prosecutor. My sister is a longtime prosecutor, and they always said, don't play defense, play offense. That's always their thing. Don't play defense. So Bill, he's playing, and you know what? Will Wade. Think about what's happened with Will Wade and Sean Miller. Both of them, they played offense. They played defense. They didn't say, hey, look, we're going to sit out. Maybe Sean sat out for one game. Will Wade said, to hell with this, and got his AD fired. Right? I mean, all three of these guys have played offense. And when you back down and you apologize. Look what happened to Louisville. They did everything right. You just mentioned North Carolina State. We'll see what happens. They did everything right. Play offense, not defense. Good way to go through life, Seth Greenberg.
You know, the other thing I just learned, I mean, you got your sister's a prosecutor, your brother's a prosecutor.
Yeah, here we go.
Stop talking BS with me and me interrupting your, what do you call that, the pickleball games?
Oh, it's a hell of a pickleball game, yeah.
Pickleball game.
My wife and I, our goal is to be the over 50, now probably, I got to wait 5 years, the over 50 mixed doubles pickleball champions. Played at Venice Beach, California, with Jason Benetti going to broadcast, sitting on his side with a microphone that's not attached to anything. That's what we're going to be by the end of next summer. National champs, pickleball, mixed doubles, over 50.
I can see. And if you have anything involving Benetti is good because he's the best.
All right, let's go. We got John Mugar on the phone. He is the head, the founder of the TBT. Hey, we told you the TBT was going to save basketball this summer, and the TBT is poised to save basketball this summer. For those of you that don't know what the TBT is, it's the basketball tournament, $1 million winner-take-all tournament with the Elam ending, which you saw during the All-Star game. And the founder, the originator, the presidente, you name it, he is, John Mugar, joins us. John, number one, thank you for joining Seth and Dan on the World's Greatest Podcast. Number two, this is probably asked of you every day by many, many people, but right now as we sit here, are all systems go for the TBT?
Yeah, and I'm one of them because I'm driving across New York State right now from Boston to Columbus on a 12-hour drive with 1,000 bottles of hand sanitizer behind me in my trunk. So I'm doing exactly what Adam Silver is going to be doing in 3 weeks when he goes to Disney World, probably.
John, how were you able to pull this thing together? With everything that's going on in the world, how were you able to have your vision become a reality with everything that's happened with the pandemic and everything that's happened in society?
It's been really challenging, as you can imagine. It's the scene that keeps coming back to me. If you guys have seen Apollo 13, when they're up there and they're losing oxygen, and they dump out all the tools on the table that they have to work with in the ship, and it's like a scissors, duct tape, and a tube, and the crew down there has to figure out how to get more oxygen to these people up there in space. And like that's exactly the process we went through over the past 3 or 4 months, just trying to figure out what tools we would have to be able to pull off TBT and how we could get there. The most essential one was testing, which we had no control over, but that finally came together about a month and a half ago. We knew we'd get access to it, and it was reliable enough to be able to take this on, and that's when we decided we're going to go for it.
My son is coaching a team, and he just took a spit test today. If you don't mind, because this has been in the public eye with the NBA, what are the procedures or precautions that you're taking for the teams that are participating?
Every player is going to have 2 at-home tests. They're going to have to be obviously negative on each. And then once they show up to our site in Columbus, they're going to have to take 4 more negative tests over a 5-day period. So no one's going to get on the court to compete unless they've gone through 6 consecutive negative rounds of testing. That's first and foremost. We're building a bubble, basically building our own country with its own rules out of Columbus, out of our hotel, and out of the arena. And everyone's going to have to come into quarantine with us and abide by those rules in order to play.
And when you say the rules, what I heard today was when you get to Columbus, you legitimately, you're tested, and then you have 24 hours basically totally with no interaction whatsoever until your team meets in the next test. Is that correct? How are you going about that? I mean, like, the number of tests and the attention to detail, how are these guys eating? How are they transporting from the hotel to the facility and back? How are you quarantining and creating that bubble?
Our testing partner is called Vault, and they're operating out of the lab at Rutgers University. That's where they run their samples. That's where literally we will be running our sample twice daily. So we'll do sample collection on site through a drug-free sports, they're called. It's a sample collecting agency. They work at all kinds of samples and test athletes for all those types of things, even outside of a pandemic. So we partner with them. We have two windows when players come in every day, and we'll get the samples, we'll batch them together, and then they go off to Rutgers. So the early collection is going to go via plane midday, and the evening collection is going to go via car. It's going to be an 8-hour drive from Columbus to the lab at Rutgers.
All right, let's shift to something else. How did you come up with the idea of the TBT?
Dan Friel, since seventh grade, and I, we were just kind of sports fans, and we were texting back and forth on a Sunday morning back in 2011, I think it was, and we were saying, you know, we always kick around different ideas, different formats. We're saying, you know, wouldn't it be cool, what would happen if you just put $50 million on the table and said anyone could play for it? You know, like, would NBA teams enter? Would college teams enter? Would EuroLeague teams enter? Would LeBron just get together with his friends from high school and enter? Like, all those possibilities crossed our mind. And it became, it went from this crazy conversation amongst friends to this obsession where I really beat it out and try to figure out if there's any version of that that we could actually pull off. So I've always been a basketball player. I love basketball. I played Division III, played my whole life. And it just became like a true passion from the initial idea on.
It's an incredible what from that idea to where you are, forget about what's going on this year. How many teams did you actually have apply that wanted to participate in the TBT? And could you have ever dreamed of the event, every game on ESPN, you know, the number of guys that have played in the NBA, the interest that it's driving, the uniqueness of the Elam ending? I mean, did you ever believe that it could grow to this thing and maybe even bigger, even this year?
No, I thought my friends from Tufts and I would be able to compete for the championship.
Oh, geez. Oh, geez.
I really did. And the first game is 8:30 in the morning, and Hakeem Warwick and Marshall Henderson showed up to the gym. And Marshall Henderson was just coming off of graduating from school. So at that moment, I was like, oh, okay, there's a whole different caliber of player here that we're talking about.
Are you surprised at how it's grown?
Yeah, a big moment this year was that All-Star game. I mean, to have Chris Paul out there pregame talking about TBT, the lead into the game, and then see 20,000 people watching, 8 million people watching an ending that we helped conceive of and we named in a game, and then for it to be accepted the way it was, and for people to enthusiastically cheer for charges in a basketball game and an All-Star game, was like a very, very overwhelming moment, and it was a big experience for us.
Well, I look at the TBT. The Elam ending's incredible. The Elam ending can work at any level, anywhere in basketball. But how about the idea of, as these teams come rolling in, you've got the money team, you've got alumni teams, you've got teams that, you know, Team Challenge ALS. Did you even have any idea that all these different types of teams would come together and groups of people would come together, some with causes, some with some of the most famous athletes in the world, basically being the owners? I mean, like, does that blow your mind?
Yeah, it's a nod to the format. I think what I'm so sick of as a sports fan is hearing players say it's a business. And you see the unions argue all the time over money and contracts, free agency, and guys get traded and say, yeah, it's a business. With TBT, they're there because they love to play basketball and they love who they're playing with. Like, this is the only opportunity these players have to assemble their group of players and go to war with them. And like, and you can tell when they're on the court that they're not being paid. They're not paid to play there. Everyone wants to win the money, but they're not there because it's a job. They're there because they love basketball and they love who they're playing with. And like, there's something really infectious about that when you're watching it up close. And you sense this very authentic, and it's really fiercely competitive because of that.
Hey, John, one of the things that was always great about the TBT was the different fan bases. You know, particularly I think of Syracuse's fan base. You saw Dayton come out in droves, Ohio State. Was there ever consideration, or is there a consideration to allow a certain number of fans in?
We considered it, definitely. At this point, there's no way. Once we decided where we're going to play, there were certain states that were proposing the potential for fans. And, you know, those states, some of those states are not doing so well right now in their case counts and that sort of thing, and they're kind of dialing back. And we wanted to go to Ohio, number one, because it's driving distance for as many of our players as possible, just in case people wouldn't feel comfortable flying. And Columbus is a great fit because our defending champions based there. And we thought it would be a good honor for them to defend in their home turf. So, and Ohio had done a pretty, you know, strict job in managing this. So we knew that fans would not be an option in Ohio pretty early on.
You know, you talk about teams, and obviously Carmen's crew won last year, but like Overseas Elite, right? Explain to the people listening to the podcast, the world's greatest podcast, what Overseas Elite is and what they've been able to do. They won four consecutive, correct?
Championship? Yeah, they won 31 straight games, 32 straight games, four consecutive championships.
So how'd they do that? And what? You've been watching this thing from the beginning. What makes a championship TBT team? Explain how good these guys are. What makes a championship level team? I think we get a chance to watch on ESPN.
That team are mercenaries. I mean, very honestly. And I don't think they've practiced a day in their lives. And these are players who play professionally. They're all over the place. Maybe some of them are really great to be coached. Maybe some of them are not easy to be coached, but they come together for TBT. When the ball tips up, they are the fiercest competitors I've ever seen. And they in TBT, it doesn't matter who you're standing across, and every player will tell you this. It could be a group of guys who never played college basketball or played Division III or whatever. Once the whistle sounds, like you're at war, and you're going to get punched in the mouth if you take your opponent lightly. You can't come in with entitlement. And those Overseas Elite guys, they play so hard, and they have such passion on defense. They never care who scores the most points. They don't care who comes off the bench, and they're extremely, extremely talented on top of that. So they're just the fierce competitor, and that's why they do so well in TBT.
Yeah, and there's some good stories here too, John. Like Team ALS, right? I mean, you know, that the whole thing there is just so awesome. Are you like? A lot of people thought this would end up just being an alumni thing, right? Different schools and their alumni, which it is. But the causes of this thing are pretty cool as well, are they not?
They are, yeah. I mean, at the center of every team, regardless of whether it's an alumni team or charity team, it's like there's a nucleus there of guys who are playing for something. Like some of them are playing for alumni. Some of them are reliving their college days. Some are playing for a friend who died of ALS. I mean, and some of them are playing just to get together with their friends again and not even around any of those things. And like the nucleus of every team is this rooted in passion. And like, there's an authentic desire there to play for one another. And I think that that's the center of every single team that's built. And you can tell when you're watching.
Yeah. Team Challenge ALS, the relationship that Sean Marshall had with Pete Freitas is incredible. They were college roommates and, you know, he actually started this team, and he used Overseas Elite as his model of how he put it together. But those are all guys from the Inland Empire. I mean, they're all most of those teams are guys that grew up together, and then they've added pieces. And some of them played together at DC. Some just grew up playing against each other, in high school. When you had to narrow the field down, how difficult was it to get to this 24?
We had over 120 teams apply for 24 slots, so it was extremely difficult. We've had a history with a lot of these teams, so I think about 75% of our teams are repeat teams, so we knew what to expect, and we know that general managers like Sean, what they're going to deliver, how they're going to play, what their team's going to do, how they're going to present, how reliable they're going to be. So teams like that is very easy. But our list this year of teams like that was so long. So it was really challenging, especially with teams who have played in TBT before. It was really hard to not have them back because we knew we would have them in a 64-team field.
How'd you do it? How'd you decide?
We have a committee. So we have about five people who talk about every team and rank them according to talent, past performance, reliability. A lot of it is determined in the months of team building leading up to the actual tournament. So it's a ton of interaction with the general managers done by Dan and Jake at TBT. It's a lot of getting a sense for how well they grasp the process, how committed their players are, how much control the general managers have over their players, and then how dedicated they're going to be. We've been burned so many times going for, you know, these big name former NBA players who wind up maybe not showing up once they come to CBT or teams that come together barely with six players. And we're very good at spotting those at this point. As a result of that, we put a huge emphasis on reliability.
Yeah, we've seen that before. We've seen guys, you know, and it doesn't happen anymore, we've seen guys, I'm not going. I'm glad you guys do that because the teams that are teams make for the best games. You know, the star guy that's kind of above it all, just hanging out, they never last, and they're not interesting. You know, nobody wants to cover that, but the teams are the greatest, John, and that's good stuff, man. I'm really glad to hear you say that because that's so important to running something. It's like a slam dunk contest. Some guy stands out there and, you know, misses every dunk and acts cool. That doesn't do anything for you. You want guys that are getting after it, John, and I really appreciate that. I do. I think it's great.
All right. So is DJ Kennedy the LeBron James of the TBT? DJ Kennedy obviously played at St. John's, and he's the heart and soul, I guess, of Overseas League. Would you say he's the LeBron James of the TBT?
I think that's fair. Yeah. I think his former teammate, Kyle Fogg, is not to be
Yes.
He was pretty good, too. I think he won two MVPs during that run. But I think DJ is probably the face of TBT.
So then is Travis Diener what would he be? That's what I want to know. The everyman's TBT All-American?
Oh, man. Diener's been the best. He's the best. I don't know what he equates to. I don't know if there is a Diener in any professional sport. That's what's so great about TBT. I can't think of a single Diener.
You have a broadcaster that's a Diener. I mean, like, Dan Dockage would be the broadcast version of Diener.
When you say that, last year after he wins a game, Bob Rathburn and I are at the bar having a drink. Who comes and wraps his arms around me? And I order one for him, Travis Diener. And then he and his boys from the Marquette team, man, they won the game in Chicago, ordered up, and just started telling stories. And it was, I had to go to bed because I'm old, but had this been 10 years ago, I'd have been up till 5 in the morning doing whatever they wanted to do whenever they wanted to do it. So I'll take that as a compliment, my friend.
That's always giving you a compliment. Hey, John, we appreciate what you're doing.
Yes, sir.
We talk about it saving basketball, but your sacrifice, the risk you're taking, your commitment to making TBT a reality in a safe environment, it's incredible. It really, really is. And my hat's off to you. And I, you know, Dan and I are really appreciative that we can be a small part of it. And we are excited to bring our very best starting the fourth and giving people a taste of basketball again and a taste of what the TBT is all about.
Thank you. I mean, I appreciate your guys. You guys love the property. It's clear from day one. There are 350 of us, really, including players and staff, who are trying to bring basketball back to America for the first time since March 12th. So it's no single person's effort, but I think we're all in this together and we all want it to work. So we're pulling for it.
Thank you for listening to Courtside with Greenberg and Dockage. You can listen and subscribe to all ESPN podcasts in the Listen tab of the ESPN app, including the latest from the NBA and the Hoop Collective podcast, available in the ESPN app or Apple Podcast.
Geico knows there are many reasons why you ride. From the thrill of the revving engine and pure adrenaline of flying down the highway, to the confidence of knowing that Geico always has your back with 24/7 access to claim service. But Ari Snyder has one reason in particular.
I have extremely large upper arms. They won't even fit into most shirts. Thankfully, biking really embraces vest culture, so I feel accepted.
Geico Motorcycle. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more.